Hello, everyone. This is your host, Dr. Tomi Mitchell from the Mental Health and Wellness Show. Today, I have the pleasure of introducing Dr. Jessica Metcalf. She is a self-intelligent consultant with a focus on professional and personal development and workplace culture improvement. She is a former dental oncologist and education director at one of the top five cancer centers in the world. She started out by teaching the medical and dental community how to improve a patient's quality of life, post-cancer therapy, and now helps high achievers like you and I and teams improve their quality of life, preventing burnout and navigating imposter syndrome, perfectionism, and people pleasing. With no further ado, I'd like to introduce our lovely guests.
Thank you so much for having me today. I am so excited. So excited.
Me too. You know, when I connected with you and I read your bio, I was like, I already know what this girl's going to be like. She has to be on fire because like you're killing it professionally. You know, your first career as a dental oncologist. And now you've kind of let your wings shine. You've shown your true self through this passion of this consulting. So can you maybe share with our listeners a little bit more about who you are, like what inspired you and what you do?
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much for asking that. So a few years ago was when I was diagnosed with clinical depression, a generalized anxiety disorder, and was experiencing my third burnout. And at the age of 14, I decided I was going to become a dentist. And so I put horse blinders on and I just said, okay, time to become a dentist. And I just worked extremely hard. And anytime that I would tell someone that I wanted to be a dentist, their usual response was, don't dentists have one of the highest suicide rates? Yeah. And I didn't understand it at the time. I was like, no, I'm this bubbly, just happy-go-lucky person all the time. I'm like, no, I would never understand that. And then little did I know that I would end up down that path of a deep, dark depression and a pit of despair that I just didn't see a way out. Now, growing up with a mama who's bipolar, I knew what depression was. And to me, I wasn't experiencing depression because I was doing all the things. I was going to work. I was seeing all the patients. I was sitting on all of the societies and associations and organizations. I was a clinical instructor at the University of Toronto as well. And so to me, because I had checked all the boxes, I'm like, no, this can't be the case. So it was really natural for me when I finally accepted the diagnosis and started to get the help that I needed, that there were all these questions. And being at the research center, it was just really natural for me to dive in and start to find the literature around, well, why as professionals and as high achievers do we start to experience things like depression? Why are the suicide rates so high? Why are burnout rates so high? And so when I started to dive into the literature, and at the time social media was using burnout as a buzzword and still is at times, and I was like, okay, well, if there is this buzzword that is happening, I want to know every detail associated with it so then I can then teach others. And that is one of my superpowers, is being able to take information and turn it into a teachable item so that people can take tangible and strategic tips away with them so they can start to make changes in their everyday life. And that is why I was like, okay, well, I already started speaking on how to improve the patient's quality of life. I then started to sprinkle in ways during that lecture for the clinician on how to take care of themselves.
Beautiful.
And then I had people reaching out from all different types of professions saying, hey, can you teach on this topic? And I said, okay, started to expand out, started to coach, and then realized, okay, I'm doing really well in this field and I really freaking enjoy it like so much that I was like, okay, I think it's time to start a consulting firm.
I completely agree. It sounds similar to my own trajectory too, like having lived burnout, teaching patients. And like, okay, doctors need doctors too. Clinicians need people do. And then expanding. I know that's amazing. You know, you ask, you know, like, how is it that me, yourself, like this high functioning, successful person could possibly be depressed or, you know, anxious or whatever. But the fact is, a lot of us high achieving individuals are depressed or anxious or whatever. But it's like high functioning. Our version of how we stereotype depression and anxiety to look like does not necessarily reflect the majority of us, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, dentists actually do have the highest suicide rates out of all the medical professions that I do know. At least it was the case 4 years ago. I don't know about now, but
I think we're like number two. I think we're like number two right now.
The psychiatrist.
I think it was psych. Yeah, I think you're right with that. Yeah.
Overachievers.
Yeah.
But I know we laugh at it, but it is a serious thing. But why do you think it is? Why do you think that high performing type A, you know, want to go to school for a decade plus in life and then add more school and add lifelong learners? Like, why are they prone to these things?
So when I started diving into the research, things that stood out for me was one particular stat. And if you are an individual who experiences imposter syndrome and perfectionism, you are more likely to develop psychological distress, ultimately leading to burnout. So now if we start to look at other components in general, okay, so that high achiever, that just got ingrained into us right from the get-go of
elementary school.
Yeah, right.
Like, even before.
Yeah. And so the thing is that as we started to move through as that high achiever, we just kept moving that goal because the people that we were with at that point, that bar just kept getting raised and that became our new standard. And when that ends up happening, but we're not understanding how we're showing up. So that self-doubt, the people-pleasing, the unrealistic expectations that we're putting on ourselves, if we don't evaluate and give ourselves boundaries and the opportunity to make mistakes and grow. And when we say make mistakes within healthcare,
you're going to take your license. How do you, you're human? Do you have a risk of any, like, that's, that's a no-no. That's like,
and that's, and oh my goodness. So those thoughts start to tumble where we just have that overthinking. So now it goes from, okay, what if I make a mistake? What if it's a complication? What if a patient complains? What if I get sued? What if I can't pay my bills? What if I, and if we just live in that constant fear, that self-doubt, we're always going to condemn ourselves before we choose to take care of ourselves.
Yes, that is very true. You know, it's so true. I don't know what else to say, but let's break down some of these terminologies for our listeners, especially those who are new to this circle. This imposter syndrome, I've kind of heard more about it, I would say, in the past year and a half. Maybe it's just because I've been in this whole industry immensely. But like, what is imposter syndrome to you, and how does that show up as this, as I call this perfect recipe for burnout, being a high achiever, perfectionist, and imposter syndrome? So what is this syndrome?
Imposter syndrome is self-doubt coupled with the feeling that you're going to be found out.
Yes.
And so what ends up happening is you sit in this fear, and so you overextend yourself. You feel like you have to keep proving yourself time and time again. You're always worried that the shoe's about to drop and that someone's going to realize that you're a fake. So you underestimate your abilities, you explain away your successes, and you're consistently downplaying who you are as that professional. And when that ends up happening, it doesn't give you room to grow or to learn or to try new things, because you always feel anything that you do will never be enough. Case in point are the professionals who get stuck in analysis paralysis, always looking at that software, taking that one more course before they can implement clinically because they're afraid that they just don't know enough before they start. And that's a really scary place to be in, because you're trying to break through your own barriers, but you also feel like you can't ask for help because then someone's going to think of you as a fraud because you should actually already know it. So you're just stuck in this cycle time and time again. And within healthcare, we can separate ourselves and keep ourselves on islands away from everyone because we think if we ask, then someone's going to judge us.
And you know, as you're explaining this, my mind flashed back to university when students would be like, oh yeah, I don't study, I don't know anything. Like, they'll be just self, like, defeating words. Like, they just were afraid to even say, like, I want to be in pre-medical, like pre-med. Like, I'm looking at it, people were doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
Even I only think about the term in the past 2 years, but when I look back, I'm like, this was like my colleagues. This is like 3/4 of my class, if not more. These closet studiers, these people who just try to downplay everything and just felt so insecure of themselves.
Yeah.
Maybe we're self-selected into these programs. Maybe that's just...
So that is So that is the key aspect, is part of who ends up becoming affected is the self-selected individual. And when we are in our professional school, the people who are talked about are the top 10 in the class, or yes, it's always reaching for A's and getting that 100%. But that's on a technical term. That is on a very paper testy that doesn't apply necessarily or follow through into clinical practice.
Yes.
And so what ends up happening is we consistently are living in this, it has to be 100%, it has to be 100%, it has to be 100%. But then you get a patient with X, Y, and Z going on, and you're like, but that wasn't in, that wasn't how it came together. How am I supposed to get that 100%? So in the back of our mind, even though we're not taking that test actively anymore, subconsciously, we programmed ourselves to react a specific way and to think a specific way. So we have to unravel that and recognize, okay, I have to, instead of just be taking a test to get a high grade, I have to be learning these problem solving and critical thinking skills and recognizing that I may not have the answer, and it is okay to say, I don't know.
Exactly. I agree. And you know what? I'm so thankful. I got into medical school, thank God, I'm happy. But I wasn't the 99%, 99.99 student, like with like 50 degrees and whatever. Like, I don't know, but I think because I wasn't and I accepted that, I came to terms with my humanity. I mean, that's why I wasn't burnt out a ton of times. I had my one major burnout, but again, I'm pretty stubborn and not surprising I burnt out. But anyway, I felt like it's a journey, right? Mm-hmm. Whatever you're learning could help you, yourself, your family. So if it's not on the test, it's okay. It might save you down the road. And literally that's what happened in my life. It wasn't on the test, but that knowledge saved me and my family down the road. So having that mindset, and for early learners, so those of you who are like thinking about going to school, or those of you who have friends or family in school, try to look at the bigger picture. Don't get caught in that rabbit hole of being perfect, because when you get to be clinicians, whatever you do, someone's going to come to your office with like in your case, dental oncology, of oral melanoma, which you're like, holy Hannah, I feel enlarged lymph. It's like, this is not cool. Like, I'm feeling rock hard lymph nodes. They haven't seen anybody in such a long time, and they're concerned about their like teeth.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It's like, life isn't perfect. Life is messy. And the sooner we all come to terms with that and enjoy the great kaleidoscope, which is life, it's just interesting, the better it will be for us. But like I said, many of us in this field are by nature high achievers, right? There's a right answer, right? When you do math, the calculus, there's a correct answer.
Yeah.
It could be 12.7 pi. No, or pi is 3.14, blah, blah, blah. It's not 3.54. It's 3.14 and whatever else the rest it was. I don't remember, never did. But it's like, we are ingrained to think this way, but we have to realize real life isn't this way. And when we add work life, personal life, like all the other things that it means to be a human being, not just a nerd or someone reading a book who can regurgitate information, we have to come to terms with this.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you hit the nail on the head, because when it comes to, let's talk about that perfectionism aspect. So perfectionism is linking your self-worth to the ability to achieve
outcomes. Yep.
Right? And it's setting not realistic, but unrealistic expectations, which means you're consistently moving that goalpost before you even succeed.
Yes.
And the third component of perfectionism is developing negative side effects, which includes stomach ulcers, insomnia, other chronic health issues. That is the actual definition of perfectionism. And yet we walk around saying, I'm a perfectionist.
And we're proud of it.
And we're proud of it. And it's like, when I think back and I'm like, I don't want to have to be on that antacid, that proton pump inhibitor for indefinitely. Like, that's not something that I want apart. So I call myself a recovering perfectionist, because I can definitely see it sneak up on me at times, because those are old habits that just are so ingrained that I've had to unpack for myself to not only help me heal through my depression, my anxiety and burnout, but to make me a better clinician as well.
Yes, yes. Yes. And you know, being a better clinician to me is not just the knowledge, the clinic, the hands-on skill. a secret sauce that's missing for so many people is that human touch, that empathy, that ability to connect with your patient and earn their trust. Mm-hmm. Because that alone is stronger than so many pills. There's a placebo part of it too. The fact that they trust you and they believe in you, they do better.
Yeah.
Right? Yep.
They do. They really
do. They follow
do.
Through. And they the want research, to make you proud. Yeah.
Yeah. The research has shown that. The research has shown that in regards to doctor-patient relationship and what that looks like and compliance.
Yes.
Right? It makes a huge difference when you can connect with that person and they just don't become a number on your roster. And yeah. I realize there are days where we move through our days so fast, and mm-hmm. I get that. Mm-hmm. However, when we give ourselves the opportunity to sit back, look at that bird's eye view and recognize that, okay, I can take a breath. I don't need to be perfect, and I'm going to help these patients. And when you go in with those intentions, it changes how you show up to that person.
It's huge. It is huge. I've seen it, lived it in my own professional life. And it's so important, that connecting and knowing that our worth is not determined by outcome.
Yeah.
And not only that, what we may see as an outcome in one period of time, that like that one spot, like the cross reference, is just a tiny bit of the outcome, because that horrible experience that we may be feeling our patient is going through and we somehow feel guilt or whatever, even though it was nothing to do with us, that may actually be a blessing in that family. That thing birthed something beautiful, mm-hmm. right? A generation of change, being proactive, being aware, being more compassionate, have sense of humanity. So that negative thing that we're so focused on through the tunnel vision may actually be something beautiful.
Yeah.
We just might not be privy to that information at that point.
Oh, that is so powerful. So powerful and such right? a great reminder. Yeah.
Right? It's just reminding ourselves of the bigger picture. We are just one grain in the sand. So don't go home and worry about what our grain in the sand looked like, because you don't know. Right? You don't know.
So good.
The direction in which it's going. So just thoughts. I'm just flowing, because like honestly, I'm in a really good space, and everything we talk about is like a lived experience.
Yes.
Seeing, looking at things in retrospect, mm-hmm. challenging situations with myself, my patients, whoever, and then looking at it now and being like having peace. But that comes with what I call emotional intelligence, right? Having, and that's a topic on its own, or self-intelligence, however you want to call it. That EQI, like it, emotional intelligence for me trumps IQ. Because again, this is this problem that self-selecting, talking about these programs, these high achieving programs, whatever. I think a lot of them self-select IQ over other other things.
Being
like,
human.
Right? Yeah. Being human, being a nice person.
I'm that number right there. So when I applied to school, I actually went to school in the States. And one of the reasons I did that, I applied to dental school 2 years in a row. First year I applied to Canadian schools. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't have even have looked at me because I had 2 years in my undergrad degree. I did 5 years undergrad. That just tanked. And during those 2 years, I was diagnosed with a learning disability at the age of 20. So I had to learn how to learn all over again. Mm-hmm. I had a mom who was in a near-death car accident. Oh. And because of being bipolar, she developed psychosis from her traumatic brain injury. Mm-hmm. So she actually couldn't remember who I was. And so I stepped in to be able to help out as best as I could as well. And the third component is my 15-year-old cousin at the time committed suicide because she was being bullied at school. And yet because my numerical value
didn't hit it.
And so mm-hmm. I remember when I applied to schools in the States, I got an interview to one school, so Boston University. And I'm so damn grateful
that's a great school, by the way.
Yeah.
That's a blessing.
Yep. They took a chance on me, and I'm so grateful. And I remember sitting in my interview, and we had an interview for about 45 minutes, mm-hmm. and we were talking about poutine and the music scene and everything. And then all of a sudden, the binder of where my application was, he dropped it open. He's like, "So tell me what happened." Mm-hmm. And I told him what happened. And I said, "What I learned from this is that life doesn't stop. So even when I'm in dental school, there are still going to be potential situations where my personal life is still going on. There might be deaths, there might be challenges, there might be illnesses. So I learned that I am resilient and that I'm gritty, and that with the passion and perseverance that I have, that I will still do well. And then I graduated top 20 in my class. I was like, great.
Yes.
So it's one of those things where when you're given when you're set in a situation where life throws you lemons, mm-hmm. you get to change where you want to,
yes.
where you want your value to exist.
Yes.
Because the value wasn't there. The schools didn't see me as being valued in Canada.
Girl,
and that's
same
totally
happens
fine.
To me with Canada too. Like yeah. literally, like they look at a number, but they don't see the full person. I went to school yeah. in the Caribbean, which is was American based school, but the same idea. They looked at the whole me, but then I look at me now, I'm like, I bet you wish you had your university degree on my degree. You wish you could say right? I was your alumni, but no, because you were so tunnel focused. And now it's biting you in the ass, by the way. But right?
Yeah.
And they
yeah.
saw the humanity. They saw that you're a real person. Yeah. And that's how it should be. Mm-hmm. Not these programmed robots.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You survived. You showed resiliency. You were able to get back up despite life throwing its worst at you. Mm-hmm. And I'm so thankful that you were able to get through that. And I have this saying, and I'm not a drinker, so I'm not promoting alcohol, but I'm just saying, when life throws you lemons, you make cocktails, okay?
Yeah.
This lemonade nonsense. I'm like, no, make your mocktail or slice a lemon on the side, girlfriend.
Yes.
That's what I do. Life yes. threw the whole card at me and the lemon, okay?
Yeah.
But it's that inner stuff that you were tried and tested from a young age, right? Mm-hmm. Not just when COVID happened that you had your first test. No, most people like us, we were tested long before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, it's one of those moments in time when I look back and I used to think of it because I didn't get into dental school the first time around that defined me and that
yes.
was a stain
I
on me.
I hear you, girl.
Right? So mm-hmm. it was, and going back to that perfectionist mentality mm-hmm. and that imposter syndrome, I remember being at dental school on that first day in this auditorium and there were these circle tables and like 10 people per table. And I remember finding like the table in the corner because I was so worried that they were going to get to like my name on the attendance list and being like, oh my goodness, we let her in. That was by accident. We actually need to send her back to Canada.
I hear you. I hear you.
So so it makes sense. So now looking back to that burnout component
mm-hmm.
and understanding how it developed and how I didn't see it coming
mm-hmm.
because of personality traits, mm-hmm. that self-selection,
yeah.
what the environment created, what the profession mm-hmm. does. I now look back and I'm like, okay, we need to start having more of these conversations
yes.
so that people can do that internal self-reflection to be able to build and understand, okay, what changes do I now need to make to fit me?
Yes, exactly. And you know, it's not just our own internal dialogue and conflict. It's also what society puts on us. You notice, like, there's this whole, like, I got into dentistry first try, or I got this here, or or you're just, you know what I mean? Like, there's that cool, not just inside, it's the outside, but having that strength and being like, okay, I'm not defined by this story, this situation. I am so much greater than it. And just so you know, Doc, you are badass, okay? You are badass, right? You
yeah.
are a force
thank
to
you.
Be reckoned with.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
You are making impact. And you know what? I think that story we told ourselves, or you told yourself,
mm-hmm.
that's like fuel to
yeah.
you in a positive way, right? Mm-hmm. It's fuel.
You have to give yourself the opportunity to recognize that's
yes.
what it is.
Yes.
Otherwise, it can just spin you in the opposite
yes.
direction. So you have to view it. And it's really hard when you're in the thick of everything to be able to find that bird's eye view at mm-hmm. times in your own life.
Yes.
And when you give yourself the opportunity, so building on what you said with the emotional intelligence, giving yourself the opportunity to feel all the feels, to understand
yes.
that, okay, you know what? Let's process this. Let's not shove this down anymore and not understand why I'm experiencing it. So let's process this. Let's use it so I can step into and be my best me, because
yes.
we worked as hard as we did to get to a point in life that we can also enjoy it. We didn't just yes. work as hard as we did to all of a sudden then realize, oh, I can't enjoy this.
Exactly. Life is, I'm sure you had your aha moments where you're like, okay, this is not the way I want my life to be. Like, something
mm-hmm.
needs to give.
Yeah.
And at this point, you're like, I don't care what other people think. I don't care what they have to say.
Mm-hmm.
This is my life and I get to write my book.
Yeah.
Right? I am captain of this ship.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
I got to a point where, and this was in my pit of burnout, mm-hmm. I started wishing away the next 25, 30 years of my career.
Yeah.
Because then I was like, okay, well, if I just, and that's what we tend to do, is we tend to lump things because we've lived by semesters for so long.
Yes.
So it's like, okay, we just needed to get through undergrad to get into med school. And then once you get into med school, okay, then I just have to get through residency. And then once you get through residency, then I'll be happy. And then I'm started working. But oh, wait, no, I'm not a staff physician yet. So then I can't do this. And then maybe I should have done a fellowship and then not. And then it's always the, if this, then I'll be happy. And that puts an enormous amount of pressure on us. So at that point, I was wishing away my entire career so I could get to retirement in hopes that I would then feel happy.
Yes.
But that needs to be unraveled way before that point, and not just waiting, because working at the cancer center has shown me not everyone makes it to retirement.
Thank you. So each day you should like dance and be free and to have those moments of bliss and connect with that inner child, because you don't know tomorrow. No, 10 minutes from now, you know, right now.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. You see the worst. By the time they're in your cancer center, it's like, it's often not good.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not thinking, I wish I had, got perfect A's in my SATs or my admittance tests or my MCATs or whatever.
No one's coming in saying that. That's for sure.
I should have got an extra point in my Jeep. I should have handed in those bonus.
Right?
Questions, right? Like, nope. Live more, experience more. Okay. So let's give our listeners some like tangible things to like bite on. So, we definitely talked about what's imposter syndrome and how that impacts burnout. Like, basically, it's like blinders, it makes you not look at it yourself objectively, right?
Yep.
Yeah. And then this whole idea of mind chatter, often our mind plays tricks on us. I say success is a mind game, but also it can be where your pits are if you're not straight up here. Yeah. So how do you, in your career and with your clients, how do you recognize that like negative critter, that gremlin, those negative words that are impacting you and causing you to like walk right into burnout? Because like you said, you went through it three times. So I think by the third time, you're like, okay, I think I figured out a few things. Like, I've done things a few times, many times. I'm not proud of it, but it is what it is. But so how do you recognize them now?
Yeah, so I think what someone needs to do is first actually understand what burnout is. So there's different types of burnout that you can experience. So there's workplace burnout, which is what the World Health Organization describes as a lack of resources with unsurmounted levels of stress. So there's a lack of sustainability. So you can't keep sustaining that work environment anymore because you don't have the resources. Then you can have caregiver burnout, parental burnout, relational burnout. Mm-hmm. And so that gives you the opportunity to explore different aspects of your life instead of just assuming it's work related.
Yeah.
And so when you start to navigate burnout, it's really important to start to do the introspection first before you just go to the environment thinking, okay, well, it's the office or the job or the clinic that I'm currently in right now. So you have to start doing the introspection first. Then when you've started to do the work, that's when you can accurately start to assess your environment to determine whether or not, is it the place? Is it the people? What's going on right now? Are there not enough resources?
Mm-hmm.
So breaking down burnout, which is broken down into three components. We have the exhaustion component, which is physical, mental, emotional, and can be an inclusive of spiritual as well. Then we have depersonalization and cynicism, which in that column is compassion fatigue. Mm-hmm. So we lose that empathy and we start to get extremely negative towards people, places, things that could include our family, our patients, our staff around us. And then the third is that lack of confidence where we feel like we suck and we're not worthy. And so when we start to understand, okay, where is it affecting me? Then we get to start to be specific with how you want to approach it. The key aspect around burnout is when we recognize that that's what we're in, it starts to become overwhelming. And then we think, okay, well, I don't even know how to start to make that change. So I'm just not going to. So when you start to unpack it and you can start to look at exhaustion, start to look at your sleep patterns, start to look at the activity that you're doing. Who are the people you're hanging around with? Are they energy suckers or are they energy givers?
Yes. Right? So, refugee vampires.
Yes, exactly. Yes. Mm-hmm. Are you giving yourself that creative component, human related when it comes to museums and art, and world related or earth related when it comes to nature? Are you getting yourself outside? So that exhaustion aspect, because when you're exhausted, it just doesn't mean you need more sleep.
Yeah.
It means that there's some sort of rest that is lacking. There's a deficit in some sort of rest. Then when it comes to, okay, let's talk about those perfectionist tendencies, because that's where the negativity starts to come in towards. Let's reset our expectations and start to reset our boundaries, because, or implement boundaries for some of us, because some people haven't even given themselves the permission to implement boundaries.
Yes.
So it's getting to saying no to certain things. It's not overextending yourself. And then the last part, when it comes to your confidence, you have to start to remind yourself of what you truly are capable of and what you have done to be able to get to where you are today. Mm-hmm. So what I like to recommend, and this is something that is super tangible for someone to do as they end today's podcast, is to start to create an alternative resume. This isn't the resume that you give out to everyone else. This is your alternative resume of who you are as a human being.
Yes.
What do you take really good care of your puppy, and your puppy just looks at you with those eyes? Great. That goes on to your alternative resume. Are you the best pasta maker? And that's what's really great. Yes, you can add in your degrees and your publications and all of that stuff, but I want you to start to add in the things around your life that you resonate with. You got to remind yourself of who you are, and that starts to build your confidence up. And as you start to break down each pillar, it becomes easier and easier to be able to navigate, to ask yourself, what do I truly need?
Yeah. And you know, speaking of truly need, that kind of segues into the concept of self-care, right? Mm-hmm. So like, I'm sure you've seen the social media gurus,
the self-care
experts on burnout, and tell you to drink Thai tea and to do some yoga pose.
And take a bath, take a bubble bath and a champagne and a piece of chocolate cake. It's not that. So let's be very clear what self-care is.
Yes.
Self-care isn't just a weekend away or a spa retreat or a one-time vacation. Yeah. It is the gritty, dirty, day-to-day stuff that you do to be able to take care of you. Don't get me wrong. Yes, there are going to be certain weeks that maybe you have to put in extra time, or maybe someone gets sick and you didn't realize it was someone within the family, and that ends up having you take time off, whatever it is. But it is the day-to-day that you decide on how you choose to take care of yourself, that you are just as important as your patients.
Yes, exactly. And I also say things that are recharging, like you need to charge yourself. If at the end of your self-care, you're more exhausted, I don't know if that is truly, that shouldn't be your to-go self-care. I feel like it needs to be recharging, right?
Yeah. When someone says to me that I need a vacation from my vacation,
yes,
then you didn't set yourself up for success.
No, exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
So this even goes to, so let's say for instance, the holiday season just happened. This holiday season is the first holiday season in this quote unquote post pandemic era, which means then people, places, we got to see a lot more people, which usually you would have said no, and you would have only maybe gotten together with one set of people. Mm-hmm. Well, this year was the first time a lot of things were open, that you just had party after get together after family gathering and everything, right?
Yeah.
So what I even like to say is give yourself a hall pass. So let's say we've got some holidays coming up in the next couple of months.
Yep.
Plan it out. Give yourself, if you're going to hang out with family and there's an obligation there, and you know that at the end of that, you are depleted of your energy, ask yourself, what do I need to do to bring that energy back up to my usual state? Is that time alone? Is that time with different sets of people? Is that going for a walk or rock climbing? Whatever it is, it gives you the opportunity to plan for it. Give yourself that hall pass and put it into the schedule. When you put it into the schedule, especially for the high achiever perfectionist who is really busy all the time, you have to plan rest.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And speaking of rest, and for those who are like, yep, that's me, I definitely was the trifecta of high achieving perfectionism, imposter syndrome, aka recipe for burnout, title of this podcast. why does it take so long to recover? Because I know I've been burnt out and I definitely for sure once. And you know what? It's been going on for 3 years this year. And I can say that having gone through a very holistic approach to my recovery, healing, whatever you want to call it, I'm still recovering. Like there's still things that I didn't fully deal with that now are coming full circle that I need to make changes in my life because they were soul sucking, draining situations that I didn't need. So why does it take so long to recover?
Because it's a lifestyle change that needs to happen, which doesn't happen overnight. So what the research has shown, some people have tapped in saying that it's 1 year, all the way upwards of 10 years. And what the median tends to say is anywhere between 2 to 5 years to recover from burnout. Mm-hmm. And another stat actually just came out a couple of weeks ago. It takes 22 months to recover from a toxic work environment. So you've got to do a lot of unraveling. And so when people say to me, oh, well, I want to go back to my old self. I had so much energy. I'm like, but that's what actually got you to that burnout state to begin with. So it's no longer serving you and it's time to make that change. And when that change starts to happen, you get to trial and error what will work, what won't work. And so let's say you're an individual who turned healthcare, your profession, into your entire entity. Mm-hmm. Okay. You need to start to incorporate hobbies back in. Well, you know, you may not know exactly what you enjoy anymore because you've spent so long doing that. So you get to test it out. Mm-hmm. Do you like going for walks? Do you want to join a cooking club? Mm-hmm. Do you want to join a chess club? Whatever it is, you have to give yourself the opportunity to explore that, but not get angry at yourself if it's something that all of a sudden becomes not an interest.
Exactly.
So you have to give yourself that time. And so when we start to say, okay, it's going to take 2 to 5 years, the day that you decide that this is no longer working and it's time for a change is day one in that recovery. Yeah. And when you start to recognize that, there are still going to be things that maybe even come up after you fully healed. And I think that that's where we see the definition of healing as a start and an end point.
No.
But what if it's just journey the entire our
lifetime.
Lives? We are consistently going to be lifelong learners, not just in our profession, but in our own personal life as well. Our interests are going to change.
Yes.
Our hobbies, the people in our lives are sometimes going to change too. We have to give ourselves the opportunity to allow ourselves to learn, to grow, to expand throughout our entire life.
I love it. You just nailed it. Like I say, success is a journey, not a destination. Same thing with burnout recovery. It's a journey, not a destination. It's a lifestyle. Yep. It's something that has to adapt and change to not just our life, but the environment in which we're in, the world we are in.
Yeah.
Like just adjusting from those who are used to going to an office to going hybrid to going this and that. It's the world has changed.
Yes.
Adjusting. Yes. Part of life.
Mm-hmm.
Change is okay. You know, I've had a pleasure talking to you. And this conversation has been great. It's like my favorite. This is what inspired me to embark on this career. It was my own self journey of healing and like knowing that there is more to life than this. Like, I'm not happy. And I just want to say thank you. So to our listeners who maybe represent themselves, or perhaps they have an organization who are like, you know what? I like what this doctor has to say. How can they get a hold of you? How can they learn more? Mm-hmm. What are your details?
Yeah, thank you so much. First off, this conversation, I am in love with it. So thank you for bringing this topic up because the more that we talk about it, the more that clinicians are going to be able to take care of themselves too. If someone wants to reach out to me, they can check out my website at www.drjessicametcalf.com.
Very easy, very straightforward. Awesome. So we'll have that information in our show notes and our listeners can definitely spread the word with friends and family or coworkers if in a toxic environment or whatever. We all need to grow. We're all living organisms adapting to this world. And burnout does not have to be part of our regular existence. It's a lifestyle change. Just like flossing your teeth is a lifestyle change. And brushing and getting your 6 month hygiene checkup. I go every 6 months. I have my first cavity at 35. Thank you very much. But that's my dental plan.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. Keep those pearly whites shining.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Anyway, it was a pleasure meeting you, Dr. Metcalf. Till next time, listeners, we appreciate you spending this hour with us. Spread the word, spread the love. Till next time, Dr. Mitchell from the Mental Health and Wellness Show. Bye.